Draft day is officially behind us, and we are giving our reactions and overreactions, some late round steals, and draft day official winners and losers. This is the Fumble Rooski podcast. It may not have always showed it in the stat sheet, but you can see him making throws when he needs to make the throws.
Back-to-back games where he has three touchdowns.
Someone's got to get that six or seven spot.
He's an elite wide receiver as a rookie.
Truly a lose-lose scenario for both sides.
Welcome to the Fumble Rooski podcast by Power 88 and Secret Weapon Consulting. I'm Adam Wright with CJ Medeiros. So draft day is officially behind us. I know, very sad for one person on this show. Actually, all of us. We all enjoy the draft. It's a nice little time. We're really far away from the season, so it's that little sliver of time where you get to just enjoy football again. You're not getting football, but you get the draft. You get to cover all of these new faces who are entering the league for 2024 and beyond. So, which is a fun time, and you get to cover your own team. And figure out what needs you have, what players might be best for you. It's a good time. That being said, we're going to get into our overreactions and regular reactions, if that makes any sense. So we're going to give a few statements, CJ, and we are going to determine whether or not this would be a regular reaction, perfectly measured response, or an overreaction. Because the draft, it just ended. We're in our feels. There's got to be something where we're just acting irrationally towards. You ready?
Oh, I'm ready.
All right. So the first statement is the Bears have their best situation ever for a top pick. So their number one overall pick was Caleb Williams. They worked on their offensive line the past couple of years. They have Keenan Allen that they brought in through a trade this offseason. Last offseason, they traded for DJ Moore. They have Cole Kmet. And with their ninth overall pick, they drafted Rome Odunze, who is regarded as arguably the best wide receiver in this draft. One of them. Marvin Harrison Jr., in my opinion, is better, but someone could make the case one of Odunze could have a better career. We'll see. But reaction, is that measured or is that an overreaction?
You know, I genuinely think that could very well be a measured reaction, because we're not making any statements about his career. We're not. We're just simply saying this is the best scenario in which a number one overall pick, specifically quarterback, has been drafted to. At least modern era, like circa 2000 or maybe a little before. Because you look at other quarterbacks that have been taken number one overall. Peyton Manning, that was awful. Threw a boatload of interceptions his rookie year and played behind an offensive line that nearly got him killed. Or Eli Manning, I guess the Giants didn't technically draft him, but I mean, the Giants were never impressive, right?
Yeah. And also Joe Burrow.
Oh yeah, Joe Burrow. Yeah, got killed his rookie year behind that line. I mean, it was okay. The offense was okay with the exception of the line. Andrew Luck, that situation was pretty good,
But that was more so.
We all know how that ended.
That was more so Andrew Luck doing more with less. Also, Andrew Luck didn't get hurt, actually, at least not permanently, until what was it, year four of his career?
Yeah,
so he was still taking those teams to. That was more on the front office in years later.
I feel like that's more of a luck thing, though. Why the Colts were good, you know, because he was special. What? That was more of a luck thing, though. Why the Colts were good, which you said.
Yeah, it's more Andrew Luck who did that, because Andrew, that team didn't have the best roster. They did have Reggie Wayne still around, and they did have T.Y. Hilton.
Yeah.
But that offensive line was bad. Their defense never improved. Their drafts were just awful. It wasn't that draft. It was drafts afterwards that were just not good enough, and it ultimately sunk Andrew Luck's career. he eventually hung it up and he said, I'm done. You guys can't draft. You can't protect me. And I'm going to get killed if I stay in the league too long. Bro, the guy disappeared off the grid. We didn't even know where he was up until like 2 years ago when he showed up on TV next to Robert Griffin III.
Yeah.
I mean, the guy's been – it sucks. No, you're right. They ruined a generational talent like Andrew Luck.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
I'm just looking at other number one overall picks, like Carson Palmer with the Bengals. Cam Newton with the Panthers. I mean, he was Offensive Rookie of the Year, but they didn't really give him any weapons. Matt Stafford with the Lions. You look at Caleb Williams, right, with the Bears. I mean, I don't know if any rookie quarterback's ever played with a receiver room that's this stacked. I mean, you mentioned the guys. You know, you have Keenan Allen, DJ Moore, and you drafted Rome Odunze. Not to mention you have DeAndre Swift at running back, who can also catch the ball, as well as Cole Kmet at tight end. And the offensive line, at least as of last year, gets way too much hate. Why? Because, like, oh, but Justin Fields almost sacked quarterbacks in the league. Well, we've repeated this stat so many times. Justin Fields statistically held onto the ball longer than any other quarterback. So let's speak the truth. He was putting himself in that shoes. When he got hit, he has no one to blame but himself.
80% of his sacks came with Justin Fields holding the ball for 4 seconds or more.
Exactly.
That's all that should say all you need to know. But I think you could agree or disagree with the Rome Odunze pick, but the fact of the matter is you can have all of your weapons on the field at once. You can have your Y and Z are going to be DJ Moore and Rome Odunze. Your slot guy, your number three, is going to be Keenan Allen. Your tight end is going to be Cole Kmet. DeAndre Swift, your running back. You have all of those stars on the field at once. You don't have to sub one in for another. So I think that's a really good thing. It spreads defenses thin and helps for Caleb Williams to have time to throw. Won't need that much time to throw. And oh, by the way, I think that offensive line is underrated. I don't think it's bad. I don't think it's a good one. I think it's fine. And I think they have one of the more underrated tackle duos in the league with Braxton Jones and Darnell Wright. I think they were fine. And on the interior, they were okay too. They still need a center, but I think this is not a line that's as bad as everyone suggests. I think it's better than the one that Joe Burrow worked with when he took the team to the Super Bowl. I think it's better than that one. No one talks about that line. Oh, well, Justin Fields needs all these things and he'll do really well. Joe Burrow didn't need that. Joe Burrow did not need that. Oh, but he had all these targets. Targets do not mean nearly as much. Targets don't mean nearly as much as the offensive line. No one can get open quick enough before you get sacked within 2 seconds. No one can get open that fast. All right. Our next one is the Chiefs were gifted Tyreek Hill part two and possibly a three-peat. And I'm referring to Xavier Worthy. I don't know. Again, I don't think this kid is as good as people are saying. I think his route tree is very limited. He's undersized. He gets bullied a lot. And I just think he's John Ross part two. Maybe he ends up being a little better than that, but what does that do for you? You still need a wide receiver. So if he pans out, sure, that's great and all, but I mean, this is a big need for you. And everyone's saying, well, they haven't needed it before. Well, during these past six seasons where Patrick Mahomes has been starting, he's had Travis Kelce, an elite tight end for all six of them. And he's had Tyreek Hill for half of them. So this idea that he can do more with less. I think most quarterbacks in the league aren't winning Super Bowls with the teams that he's had in the last 2 years. But at the same time, let's not act like he had nothing. He had Tyreek Hill. He had Tyreek Hill for 3 years, and for the last four years. The last two years, you at least had Travis Kelce. So I don't think this is an overreaction. Or rather, I think this is an overreaction. I don't think he's as good as Tyreek Hill. And I think the problem is still there. Also, they address tackle reasonably late, and people are forgetting how much of a problem right tackle really is to them. They still haven't replaced Donovan Smith.
Yeah. So building off that, what Adam is referencing for anyone listening is that the Chiefs drafted BYU offensive tackle Kingsley. It's either like Suamataia in the late second round, which he's good. I think he could start in a pinch, but I don't know if it's wise to start in week one. And also, on the other side, you have Jawan Taylor, who draws as many holding penalties as any player that I've ever seen. So Xavier Worthy is interesting. Because is he good? Yeah, he's good. I mean, I always had like a second round grade on him even before he broke the 40-yard dash record. But does he go first round later otherwise without breaking that record? I would argue no. And I think he'll be better than John Ross for the sole reason that he will be playing with Patrick Mahomes. I mean, that's what you got to remember. And you know how sometimes we talk about how really good weapons can mask how bad a quarterback might be. For example, Tua with the Dolphins, right?
So vice versa, you mean?
Yeah,
so
vice versa. It
can work the other way around.
Yeah, it is. Like
most of the time it does work the other way around.
Yeah, no, this is what it's going to be. I think that playing with Mahomes is going to artificially make Worthy better, but I don't know if he's going to be a game breaker, because once – if he gets tackled in the pro league, it could get ugly. I mean, obviously, as long as they have Mahomes, the Chiefs, you know, are going to have a three-peat possibility, but let's not say that they've been gifted it yet. I mean, if they got Marvin Harrison Jr., I would say, oh, yeah, well, they've been gifted it. But they didn't, so let's just pump the brakes. There's a reason he was not, like, the first receiver drafted. There's a reason he didn't go top three.
So it's an overreaction for you?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, so I think that's an overreaction. I think we both believe that. The Chiefs still – I'm still – questioning their offensive line, and I'm still questioning Xavier Worthy. We'll see if he works out. Maybe he does, maybe he doesn't. I don't think he's going to be Tyreek Hill, but maybe he's not John Ross either. My next potential overreaction: Falcons draft day was a disaster. Reaction or not an overreaction, CJ?
That is a reaction. One of the reactions, I would argue, because everybody's like, oh, no, it's an overreaction. No. Look, and we all know what happened first round. They said, well, crap, let's just take Michael Penix, because why not? That aside, in order to even somewhat salvage that class, they would have need to have a pristine round two and onward. But what happens? Round two, I believe they traded up, right? Didn't they trade up? And they went defensive tackle. And, you know, they have Grady Jarrett, but he's getting up there in age. So, yeah, you know, maybe you take a defensive tackle. After all, Jerzon Newton's on the board. Just kidding. They took, I believe his name is Rook or Horoho. I cannot pronounce it. Rook, if you're listening to this, I am very sorry. But yeah, so they took him over Jerzon Newton. What? And then round three, to their credit, they made a very good pick. They got Washington edge rusher Braylon Trice. But then round four, they double dip at defensive tackle by taking Brandon Dorlus. And then the rest of their picks consisted of J.D. Bertrand, Jace McClellan, Casey Washington, and Zion Logue, who honestly, I didn't even think they were going to get drafted. So even without the glaring shadow of Michael Penix, I would argue that this draft was terrible round two onward. There was one pick that they had that I would describe as a legitimately good pick. And once again, that was Braylon Trice. But that is just, I mean, you double dip at DT, then you take four guys and once in round five and three round six that no one thought was even going to get drafted. Just wow.
I'll tell you why it's not an over. Is an overreaction.
All right, lay it on me.
My reasoning is because how many needs did this team really have going into this draft? I'm not trying to say that they had a good draft day. I'm not even saying that at all. What I'm saying is I kind of had the feel going into this draft that whatever they get is more bonus points to what they already have. They have good targets. They have a good offensive line. Their defense, despite having poor leadership, last season, I thought is still solid. They have good players. I thought it was more so that they'd be adding to what they already have rather than addressing needs, if that makes sense. The Michael Penix selection still makes no freaking sense to me. I'm not trying to argue for that at all. I'm not even trying to argue for the other positions that they drafted later on in the draft. It's more so like this didn't, I don't think this screwed over the Falcons at all. In fact, in some ways, like you didn't get Michael Penix. I know it makes no sense that they got Michael Penix, but they got Michael Penix while they have an aging quarterback under a 4-year deal, granted, but they do have a young future with this guy and also having your targets being young as well with Kyle Pitts and Bijan Robinson and Drake London. So like, yes, wasn't a good draft day. Not at all. But I don't think they screwed themselves over. I really don't.
I mean, I didn't say they screwed themselves over. I just said it was a horrific draft.
Yeah.
I mean, that's my point. I don't think it's going to hamper them because, you know, Penix isn't going to start. I mean, the only ones I could see legitimately starting are Rook, Okoro, and Braylon Trice, maybe. But that's pretty much it. But I mean, I don't know. How many of these guys are going to be contributing long term, I guess? I mean, I know one bad class here and there won't kill you, but you still would have liked to have seen better.
Well, a couple of them could have panned out. My definition of a disaster draft day is when you actually have needs, when you have something to lose, and then you do lose that, right? Like if you had the chance to draft a player you really needed and then you turn around and draft somebody else and then that pick turns out to be a disaster. That's kind of what I look at as a disaster of a draft day. And the Falcons, they didn't really have that many needs to begin with, if any. I mean, I still think that they have a decent defense. They could use more in the pass rushing, but there's a lot of teams that could use more in edge rushers, but they were still fine. In fact, they had more sacks this past year than the Detroit Lions. How'd the Lions do? They did all right, didn't they? So I just didn't like they. You didn't have much to lose to begin with. It was everything to gain and nothing to lose. So how could it be a disaster of a draft day if they couldn't lose anything to begin with? They didn't really have much at stake for this draft. It wasn't a huge draft for them. They made a really weird pick in the first round, but in a weird, messed up way, it kind of helps them.
Mm.
Because if Penix will have that time to develop, and yeah, he's starting when he's 28, but he'll be big league ready. And if he pans out, then you have potentially 10 to 12 years of a legitimate elite starting quarterback with Michael Penix. I'm saying this if he pans out, but he was going to be a first rounder either way.
Maybe. However, there is one thing that I do want to add as far as a disaster goes. Just from a mentality standpoint, I believe that the Penix pick might hurt them. Because remember when New England drafted Cole Strange and there were other teams literally laughing at them for it?
Yeah.
This is what is going on with Atlanta right now. The media, the fans, literally other teams are pointing and laughing at you. This was a terrible pick, and everybody knows it. And that's the thing. And so,
That's a little different. No, the Patriots had those needs.
Hear me out. So my point is, and that's the thing, Kirk Cousins didn't know this was going to happen. Arthur Blank didn't know this was going to happen. Raheem Morris didn't know this was going to happen. It would not be hyperbole to say that Terry Fontenot went AWOL on this. And when you make a pick, then everyone's just like, wait, what? I mean, we saw Arthur Blank chewing him out. We know that Kirk Cousins wasn't expecting this. What's going through their heads now? This is a mental thing. It's a mind game. And, well, every time, every little slip up, that's going to be in the back of their heads.
Okay. On to our last overreaction not overreaction. Vikings had a sensational first round. So with their first pick, they had the number 11 overall pick. They traded up one spot with the Jets to take J.J. McCarthy. Then in the with the number 23 overall pick later in the draft, they take Dallas Turner, arguably the best edge rusher in this draft. What are you thinking, CJ? Overreaction, not overreaction.
So can you just say that again? Because I'm trying to think here.
Yeah. They took J.J. McCarthy
uh-huh.
at the 10th pick.
Yeah,
and then
yeah,
they took Dallas at Turner, 23 so Dallas Turner. Overreaction, so, not an overreaction.
I mean, this is weird because I feel like it could go in both because I like J.J. McCarthy. I just didn't think he would be a good fit in New England because, you know, as a Pats fan, the McCarthy to New England rumors were getting a concerning amount of steam. But I don't know. I genuinely am just perplexed at this solely because McCarthy, you just don't know what you're going to get. I don't even think they should really start him. I genuinely don't because I believe he is the youngest quarterback in that class. Because, well, I'm a little perplexed with the McCarthy pick. I like the Dallas Turner pick. Dallas Turner and new free agent Jonathan Greenard are going to eat. But I don't know. To say this was a sensational draft, I might have to pump the brakes on that.
I don't think this was a sensational draft, so I do think it's an overreaction. But I do think that if J.J. McCarthy can play, then there we could see some fireworks early in his career. Look at that offense right now. Mm-hmm. They have managed so far so good, to hold on to Justin Jefferson. We'll see what ends up happening. They have some leverage on him with Jordan Addison and still on the team. And T.J. Hockenson, a decent offensive line, a defense that now has gotten better and younger. We could see some fireworks if J.J. McCarthy can actually play, like early, because this team, the targets especially, are loaded. They could use a run. Actually, they have a running back, don't they? They have Aaron Jones.
Yeah.
Yeah. So this could end up working out really well for him. Remember who we also this guy was also taken 10th overall in 2017. Patrick Mahomes was also considered a reach. He was a highly touted prospect who people were like, yeah, he looks good, but look at DeShon Kizer. Look at Mitch Trubisky. Look at Deshaun Watson. Patrick Mahomes was kind of the guy who like everyone was thought positively of, but no one really was wowed by him. And then he turned out to be what he is today. I'm not saying McCarthy will be anywhere close to that. I'm just saying if McCarthy pans out, we could see a really, really good Vikings team for a couple of years early on in his career.
Yeah, I can see it. I don't know if they should start him right away, I guess is my whole thing here. Because I think he can be a good system guy, but if you're going to throw him into the fire week one, I would advise against it.
The problem I have with that is, so I'm in favor of the Patriots benching the Patriots benching Drake May to start his career, but that's because the team isn't ready yet. They don't have a good offense around him. With the Vikings, they have that. Fair. So why sit him? And also, because I think J.J. McCarthy's a little more ready than Drake May is. I think Drake May is very raw. And not to say J.J. McCarthy isn't, but he feels a little bit more ready. And he's shown a little bit more of the capability to play in a more conservative offense. If they want to not open the playbook early on, he can still function because he did it in Michigan being a game manager.
Yeah, that's true. But in the NFL, you're going to have to be more than a game manager. If they want to start him out with – if they want to keep the training wheels on, that's fine and that's good. I mean, I respect that. But this is all a big if. If he goes out – I really think that if he goes out there and sucks his first year – I mean, granted, that's not indicative of anything. You can always fix that, right? But I truly believe if he sucks his rookie year, Jefferson is gone. That way, if you sit him, you can say, oh, but Jefferson, we have a good rookie for you to play with. You know what I mean? It's just – it's kind of like playing the long game, I guess. It's not the best reasoning in the world, but it would be – if you try to, like, sell Jefferson on that lottery ticket and say, oh, he could very well be good, you know, it's like – because if he goes out and sucks, Jefferson's going to leave.
Yeah. So, we'll see what happens. We're going to move on. Late round steals. That's next. This is the Fumble Rooski podcast. It may not have always showed it in the stat sheet, but you can see him making throws when he needs to make the throws.
Back-to-back games where he has 3 touchdowns.
Someone's got to get that 6th or 7th spot.
He's an elite wide receiver as a rookie.
Truly a lose-lose scenario for both sides.
Welcome to the Fumble Rooski podcast by Power 88. Secret Weapon Consulting. I'm Adam Wright with CJ Medeiros. So from rounds 4 through 7. Give me a late round steal. One player who you thought did unbelievable, who has low upside, a high upside, and could potentially outplay his draft capital.
Oh, that's easy. Round 5, Philadelphia Eagles took Jeremiah Trotter Jr. I had him, I believe, as my 2nd-best linebacker in this class, and he, in my eyes, inexplicably fell to 5. I mean, I know he's undersized, but come on. Everything is there that you would want other than that. I mean, the strength, the speed, the motor, just the ability to understand an offense. It's all there. And he, of course, went to Philly, where his father, Jeremiah Trotter Sr., played. And I just, when you have a guy who many people at least had in the top 3 of their linebackers, when you look at that and then you just watch him fall to round 5 to Philly, who is known for in some cases for their defense, I definitely think he can go out there and start. I mean, because especially since the guy they signed from Tampa, Devin White, their middle linebacker right now, is on a 1-year deal. So don't be shocked if we see Jeremiah Trotter Jr. early and often.
Mine is definitely – I like Javon Baker. He was pick, I believe, 110 out of the 4th round from New England. Wide receiver out of UCF, had over 1,000 yards this past season. And he had over 2,000 yards in the past 2 years at UCF. What I like about this guy, he doesn't have the best speed in a straight line, but his route running abilities are good enough so that during his college career, he did find himself wide open for some wide open touchdowns. So he makes up for it a little bit. He's able to create that separation. He may not be that fast. He ran a 4.54 40 at the combine, but he's still quick. And he's also a bully as a jump ball guy. I know we don't want to rely on that. That scares a lot of people away when you hear, oh, he's not the best with separation, but he's a good jump ball guy. He doesn't rely on it, which is something that I like. He still creates separation, and he can play anywhere on the field. On top of that, this guy is a competitor. Some of his quotes, the first thing that he said when he became a New England Patriot, I'm going to make people in wheelchairs stand up. That's insane. That guy, oh my God, I can't wait for him to become a Patriot. And I hope he pans out, because I think Drake, I heard this over Patriots Twitter. Someone came up with a catchphrase, Drake and Bake. I think that would be, if I'm using that, if both of those kids end up panning out. I think this will work out really well for him. He was a low risk fourth round pick, high upside player. So if it doesn't work out, it's not that big of a deal, because he was a later round pick. However, the upside this guy has for him to go in the fourth round, I really like him. I think I like him a little bit more than Jalen Polk, who they took in the second round.
So for me, another steal, I'm going to stay on the defensive side of the ball here, is from the Seattle Seahawks, round six, DJ James, the corner out of Auburn. So a lot of people had him going somewhere between early second round and at least early third round. And I don't know how he fell to round six. I mean, I'll grant you, it's pretty much a crapshoot, you know, once you get out of round two, because then it's like anybody's guess. There are reaches, there's trades, there's all kinds of stuff, but I mean, just the smooth movement, just the body control, like how he plays in coverage. These are what you want in an athlete. And I am shocked that he just fell this far. And honestly, you could probably start out and just play him up high. I mean, not as a safety, but like maybe as like a high slot guy. Just like day one. I don't know how he fell. This guy, I mean, when you compare him or give him like a young guy's like a Bryant and Woolen and Witherspoon, these youngins in Seattle are going to be a problem. I mean, don't look now, but maybe, just maybe, we might have another Legion of Boom if they all pan out.
It's a possibility. All right. Quickly, I want to move on to draft day winners and losers. Give me one winner and I'll give you one winner. You give me a loser, I'll give a loser real quick.
All right. So when I just really stop and think about everybody, you know, they're like won and lost the draft. I mean, I hate to really double down on this, because I know a lot of people might be talking about them, but the Philadelphia Eagles, I mean, they kind of got lost in the shuffle, but they actually had a really good draft. And consider this, right? Corner is, and just defensive back in general, is their biggest weakness. They go out and they grab Quinyon Mitchell and Cooper DeJean in the second round. I mean, Cooper in the second, Mitchell in the first. Those guys were both considered top five corners. And you also get the electric running back, Will Shipley from Clemson, project wideout, Johnny Wilson, Aeneas Smith from Texas A&M, Jeremiah Trotter Jr. Like, these guys went out and they got guys that can go be difference makers in, you know, just in day one. And Adam, what about you?
So I'm hearing a lot of the same teams. And last week, I already named the Patriots as a winner. So I'm going to go somewhere where a lot of people are not going to expect. I'm going to give you the Cincinnati Bengals. I think the Bengals in the first two rounds nailed two massive needs. Offensive tackle in Amarius Mims in the first round, and then that defensive tackle in the second round. So those are two. So they lost DJ Reader. They lost Jonah Williams. Yes, they replaced him with Trent Brown, but how much do you really trust your franchise quarterback who's been getting hurt a lot early in his career with Trent Brown? No. I like him as a swing tackle, though. So put him in. So put Trent Brown in there as a swing tackle. You have Amarius Mims now to pair up with Orlando Brown Jr. I think to shore up that offensive line is very important, especially with the future of all of their wide receivers in question right now. They need to. I know a lot of people are thinking, "Oh, why not Brian Thomas?" No, not just yet. Yeah. If you draft Brian Thomas, then you are guaranteeing that either T. Higgins or Ja'Marr Chase are out the door. So for them to shore up that offensive line, we've learned from the Chiefs, an offensive line is more important than elite targets. So I think that's something that you need to make sure that you shore up. The Patriots did that too. They had good offensive lines. Their targets were just okay. But if you kept your quarterback on his feet and didn't get him hurt, then the championships would roll in. You'd at least be in contention, right? The Packers, they had David Bakhtiari for all those years. And that worked out for them because Aaron Rodgers was able to stay on his feet. He had a limit for about as much he could achieve when it comes to the postseason. But he was still an elite quarterback who was one of the best in the league. It should be the same thing with Joe Burrow. There was no reason the Bengals should have been out of contention this year. They got Joe Burrow hurt, and they never recovered from it. They should have been in the postseason and dancing with the Chiefs, and they weren't. So I think the Bengals kind of won this. I think they are one of the winners of this draft. They got what they needed. They got some depth to their offensive line. I think that's important to keep Joe Burrow on his feet.
All right. I get it. So for a loser, not everybody talks about this, but I would definitely say the Tennessee Titans could be considered pretty big losers of this draft. Because seventh overall, you take J.C. Latham. J.C. Latham's a very good tackle, but as the second tackle off the board with Fashanu there, I kind of have to question that. And then round two, you take Tavondre Sweat from Texas? Why? I mean, don't get me wrong, he's good, but not at pick 38. Then they, in round four, they got Cedric Gray, the linebacker from North Carolina, who's just fine. Then round five, there's Jarvis Brownlee Jr., corner from Louisville, who I didn't think was going to get drafted. Then wide receiver, Jaquan Jackson from Tulane. And then two seventh rounders, James Williams from Miami and Jalen Harrell from Michigan, who, eh. You saw the Titans were cooking this offseason, right? They went out, they got guys like Legarius Sneed, they got Lloyd Cushery, they got Calvin Ridley. And then the draft, oh, that would just be great. But they didn't really add any true difference makers, you know? I mean, I guess maybe Latham's going to start day one, but Sweat is a project. Gray's middling, and then everybody else I don't even think is really going to do a whole lot of anything. So it's like when you need that final push, it just kind of – they went out with a whimper and not a bang is all I'll say.
Yeah. My loser is going to be the Buffalo Bills. Mm-hmm. Now, during day one – after when we recapped day one of the draft, you were mentioning them as a loser because they traded out of the first round.
Twice, yes.
Yes, they traded out twice and watched as the Chiefs got Xavier Worthy. We'll see how he is. I don't believe in him, but a lot of people do. And Xavier Leggett went 32 to the Panthers. So you had the number one pick on day two. You had Adonai Mitchell. You had I'm completely blanking on that kid. The other one, not A.D. Mitchell, not Keon Coleman. Help me out here.
Jalen Polk, like who?
No, the other guy taken by the Chargers. I'm completely.
Oh, Ladd McConkey.
Ladd McConkey. You had those three. You take Keon Coleman. A lot of people like Keon Coleman, but I'll tell you why I don't like him. He cannot create separation to save his life. So with Jalen Polk, I told you, or no, it was Javon Baker who I told you earlier in the show that I believe I like him because not because he's fat, he's not that fast, but because he's still able to create separation regardless.
Because he's quick, he's got agility, he's a good route runner. He's quick. You know?
Keon Coleman has neither of those things. So they think they found their wide receiver one, but I don't think they realize they didn't. So he reminds me of a Quentin Johnson or a N'Keal Harry, a guy who had high upside coming out of college because he was able to succeed against college competition. But once they get to the NFL, it's a rude awakening. I think Keon Coleman fits that bill. And I envy the Bills' position because you didn't really address the defense well enough, which you lost a lot of key pieces that you released. Sure, they were aging, but you have to replace those players. And on top of that, you lost your wide receiver one, and in my opinion, you still have not replaced him. So I think that is a huge problem, and the Bills have solved none of their issues. A Bills team that, when they had those pieces, they barely squeaked into the playoffs as is. And they wouldn't have had that division if the Dolphins, their division rivals, didn't cough it up at the end of the season. So I'm not high on this Bills team at all. I think they might even miss the playoffs. All right. Well, that's all the scheduled content we have for today, but you have anything else before we end the show today?
Nope.
All right. Well, that'll do it for us tonight. Thank you for listening to us. We have all our episodes available on Spotify, Spreaker, Apple Podcast, iHeartRadio, and Google Podcasts, and so much more. We have new episodes out on Tuesdays at 7:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time and Fridays at 5 Eastern Time. Be sure to subscribe to our YouTube channel. We have all our episodes available on all of our platforms, and be sure to follow our Instagram at FumbleRooski_podcast to keep up with our podcast and latest coverage on the NFL, as well as our TikTok at FumbleRooskiPod. Otherwise, we'll see you later this week. Over and out.